Hi, folks. This is CBD of the Cut Jib Newsletter Worldwide Podcast Network. In fact, it is worldwide. I am in not so sunny London. But the good news, of course, is that their real ales are as magnificent as always. Unfortunately, I don't speak Urdu, so it might be one of the last times that I ever come to this beautiful, once beautiful city. Anyway, we are very, very lucky to have Jim Lakely of the Heartland Institute here with us today. He is going to talk a little bit about their very interesting forum called the World Prosperity Forum 2026 that is a rational answer, I think, to Davos. Anyway, Sefton, how are you doing?
Yes. I'm fine. I thought you were. This was the Pay Me No Mind week episode. But here I am, JJ Sefton here in frigid, ridiculously freezing cold southern Wisconsin, and it's nuts. But anyway, Jim Lakely, welcome back from the land of fondue and Kugelglocks and Nazi war criminal gold. But anyway, and speaking of George Soros, so yeah. Welcome back. And yes, the Davos is basically, for those in the know, and it's sort of been mostly a mystery. I mean, to most people, they really didn't know about it until really over the last maybe decade or so, when people started going there. And it's where all these globalist billionaires and politicians and other, sort of Blofeld-esque characters meet and greet to plot the world's destruction and how they're going to plunder it and plunder us. So the Heartland Institute, of which you are the communications director and vice president, has held its first Global Prosperity Forum, which, as you say, is the answer to Davos, the anti-Davos, if you will. And so, Jim, good to have you on board again. Welcome back. And give us your impressions of how it went, what your aims were, and so on and so forth, and what you saw, and what your takeaways are.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, guys. I'm happy to be on again from now very chilly Northern Illinois as well. Gosh, it was I was almost wanting to walk around in shorts when it was in the 30s in Switzerland compared to what it's like now. But, it'll pass. Well, yeah, we wanted to. So the Heartland Institute, we've been watching the goings on in Davos for many, many years. And, and we wanted to put on an alternative, a global alternative to Davos. To what was discussed there, and we called it the World Prosperity Forum, because the World Economic Forum has become, especially in the last decade, as you mentioned, the place to economically and socially plan the world. Klaus Schwab is no longer the the Blofeld supreme of the World Economic Forum. He is in his late 80s now, so he's finally passed the torch on to another globalist schemer. But he gave a pretty, what I think is pretty infamous speech, and there was a quote from that speech just a few years ago, where he was in front of the assembled billionaires and world leaders, and said, the world will be shaped by us. And by us, as I mentioned, I gave two speeches in our, we were there for 5 days, Monday through Friday, all last week when Davos was going on. And as I said in one of my prepared remarks, he doesn't mean we. You and me, guys, we are not part of us. He didn't say, it's not the people. It's not the people who vote. It's not the people who make the world work and actually doing the work that keeps civilization going. He meant the people in that room, maybe 1,000 people at most in that main hall in Davos. They will shape the world, and nobody elected them to anything. They have enormous power, political power, economic power, social power, but nobody had consented to having the world run by us. That was not that's not how democracy is supposed to work. It's not how modern society is supposed to work. And it was just brazen. At that point, I guess this was just 2 years ago, I think, is when he made those remarks. The attitude,
you need a Persian cat, a white Persian cat, a monocle, and a dueling scar across your cheek when you talk like that. But yes, oh my god,
that would be great. And so we wanted to offer a global alternative to that vision of how the world should work, not just now, but in the future. And it is a future that needs to get back to the idea of creating prosperity. And you create prosperity through maximizing individual and political freedom and real free markets. Free market capitalism is the only economic scheme, if you will, devised in human history that has actually succeeded in pulling people out of poverty and misery. Poverty and misery and living under tyranny is by very far, by miles, the if you will, the state of nature of human civilization. That is the fact that we are free right now to speak, to engage in economic activity of our choice, is very much the exception to almost the entirety of human civilization. And
Hence, American exceptionalism. Not that we are an exceptional people, but we are the America was or is, and who knows if it still is going to be, the exception to what you so clearly and stated is human history, which is tyranny and oppression and misery.
And so we wanted to put on the World Prosperity Forum, and we hope to do this now going forward every year. And we couldn't get into Davos. I mean, geez,
Gee, I
we've been
wonder why.
arrested. And we can't afford it. I mean, I think the hotels there, if you could even make a reservation, I think the hotels were at minimum $1,500 a night, even for a tiny room. It's ridiculous. So we were two and a half hour train ride away in Zurich, beautiful Zurich, Switzerland. And we thought we need to
Hopefully
be
your hookers and cocaine were much more affordable, I think. I'm kidding.
Yeah, they give you coupons at the airport. It's really great. So we decided we need to put on a prosperity forum to counter that kind of globalist, socialist, commie nonsense going on in Davos. And so we had speakers like Harald Wilimsky, who is a member of the European Parliament from Austria, the Austrian Freedom Party. And of course, he's derided all over Europe in the European mainstream press as some kind of right-wing lunatic. But if you listen to him speak, all he talks about is stuff that Bill Clinton would have said in 1990. We had speakers from Poland, from Hungary, from the Danube Institute in Hungary, from the Netherlands, and of course from the United States. And from Great Britain, we had Liz Truss, the former Prime Minister of the UK. We have
Yes.
Václav Klaus, the former president, I think first democratically elected president or second of the Czech Republic. We had Lois Perry, who heads up our Heartland UK-Europe project, which is under constant attack by the left in the UK, which makes us very happy because we only take flak when you're over the target. And so we featured a three-hour program every day. For 5 straight days, you can go to worldprosperityforum.com and click the Watch on YouTube button on there, and you can see all the presentations. Well, we'll be organizing them a little bit better later. Or you can always just go to heartland.org. You can see our work there as well. But it was pretty great, and it got very good reception. And as we were chatting right before we came live on air, guys, I had never been to Davos before. Of course, I've still never been to Davos. Two of our people went to Davos. They took the train ride. I have not yet gone there. But from talking to people in Switzerland, from talking to people who were in Davos, both our people who went there to kick around for a day and see what's going on, also people who were, inside the ropes and all of that, there was a decidedly different mood in Davos this year. That quote I read from you from Klaus Schwab from a few years ago, that's about as triumphant a statement as can be made, that the world will be run by us, that they had already won, that these decisions had been made, that it is time for us to now reshape the world. We will take our hammer and our anvil and we will pound the world and the people in it into the shape that we wish. That was not the attitude in Davos this time. And it was quite amazing to even see it. I was watching from Switzerland. I was watching via X. Thank you, free speech, Elon Musk, for what was being said there, what people's reactions to it were there. I mean, you had Howard Lutnick, from the Trump administration, his big takeaway line was that globalism has failed. He was on the main stage of the World Economic Forum, and he lectured. It's like a real turnaround of everything. He's looking right in there at that audience of 1,000 global leaders and said globalism has failed, and outlined why. No small, Larry Fink, who is one of the biggest muckety mucks in the WEF and has been for a long time. He probably has a grand poobah title of some sort at the WEF. He stated plainly that the world now places far less trust in us. That was his quote. He was trying to convince his fellow global planners that basically we have failed. They have failed because there has been a rise of populism and populist parties in Europe that are, when they allow the election results to stand, that is, are taking over parliaments across Europe that are now infiltrating the European Union itself. And then, of course, the great culmination of that is the populist uprising in the United States that elected Donald Trump president of the United States for a maybe third time. Yeah, I think third time in
Yes.
2024. And so they understand that, gosh, maybe I think Larry Fink was telling them that maybe we have to use persuasion and not force anymore. And maybe that's a good thing for them. And it's certainly a good thing for us at the Heartland Institute because we put on the World Prosperity Forum so we can have an actual discussion about how the world should be formed. And we believe that the people should form their own world, whether they want to form a little world in their own country or they want to spread ideas of freedom and liberty and prosperity to others so that we may share in that prosperity. Those should all be voluntary and bottom-up, electorally driven decisions for society instead of the world will be shaped by us as the World Economic Forum. So it seemed to me that we went there at the right time, right as I think, at least on the surface, at least rhetorically, the grand poobahs of the World Economic Forum are understanding that they may have to make some arguments and make the case that you will own nothing and be happy instead of just taking all of your stuff away and telling you to be happy. So I think progress is being made on this front, and it was great to be there on the ground to experience it ourselves and to offer and present that competing view that I think is shared by the vast majority of people all over the globe.
Well,
What's fascinating
bravo, and
about
that's a,
this?
that is wonderful. And I was going to ask, the people that are attending the Davos or the muckety mucks or whatever, I mean, it's however many. What sort of people were in your audience listening to your speakers? Is it a, was it a different mindset, or is it the same people just wanting to get a different viewpoint, or were they just ordinary citizens? Or just curious about that.
Well, it was ordinary citizens. It was basically a virtual event for
Oh, okay.
we put this together really in 6 weeks. We decided, let's go, let's do it. So it was very normally this kind of event would take months to plan. So we put it together in just 6 weeks. And so we live streamed from a meeting room in a hotel in Zurich, and our speakers came there with us. I mean, Liz Truss was there with us, and so was Vaclav Klaus and other dignitaries and experts. And we talked about climate change. We talked about economics. We talked about freedom. We talked about pushing back on the aims of the WEF. And so the reception we got from the people that attended our live stream and have now watched this and have communicated with us since has been extremely positive because I think it was the Heartland Institute were a free market think tank, and there was a market need for something like this, and we were happy to fill it.
Very good. The other observation is that, it's like you talk about, well, they're going to have to make their case for, the shaping the world they wanted, but overwhelmingly people have rejected all of these things, be it climate change nonsense, transsexualism, open borders, all of these things. So I mean, what kind of case are they going to make? They're not going to make the case. What they're going to do is they're going to now just double down on having politicians and their goon squads be repressive and violent. I don't see what possible case they could make, but that's who knows.
Oh, they did make their case. And it failed. They have demonstrated over the last the entirety of the 21st century that that globalism has failed, that it will fail, that it is inexorable, that it fails. And I think that the example of the United States is a perfect one. And that is that this top-down control that began, frankly, with Clinton, and it segued almost seamlessly into Bush and Obama, was a huge driver of the stagnation of the American economy and the American people. And Donald Trump's election in 2016 was a breath of fresh air, and the economy responded accordingly. And I think that the globalists saw that and panicked. And instead of trying to be persuasive, they simply doubled down on their on the hammer, hammering us into their particular sized hole. And it failed
Well,
again.
they had the coronavirus inflicted on us and a stolen election,
Exactly.
and there you go.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. It's so it, I got there. I arrived in Switzerland on the 17th, so 2 days before the thing got going on January 19th, to get over jet lag and to set up our stream and all that stuff. But all anyone talked about that before Davos began and during the first 2 days were two things: AI and Trump. And it was very close. Trump probably won on that one. But all anyone talked about was AI and Trump. Nobody was talking about climate change anymore. Nobody was talking about you will eat the bugs. Nobody's saying that we have to eat the bugs anymore. It was all about AI. And what you saw, and I'm looking at clips that I bookmarked from while I was there watching. And you had it's really been really fun and interesting to watch the climate change agenda run head on at 100 miles an hour straight into the brick wall of AI, specifically the power needs of AI, that we can't be. And Larry Fink said this to Davos, not in Davos, but to another World Economic Forum meeting, what, I think 2 years ago, that, okay, yeah, I know we want people to go green and to build windmills and renewable energy and sustainability, this and that. And he's like, the AI revolution is coming. It's actually already here. We cannot power it with that kind of stuff. We need real baseload power. We need nuclear is what they would prefer, but we're going to have to be okay with coal and natural gas. Let's do it as clean as possible, but we need a lot more energy. And I think the strategy of the WEF, in a lot of ways, it was while smiling and saying that we want to keep the planet green, the long-term plan was to actually depower the people, because you can't be prosperous and free without abundant and cheap energy. And wind and solar and biomass and all that other stuff is the exact opposite of cheap and plentiful. So, I was seeing more and more people on the stage of the World Economic Forum saying that, we can't power the future without, it's very energy intensive to power the future that's going to be driven by AI. And so we're going to need this power. So, there's a little bit of practicality that was happening on the stage and at the World Economic Forum this year, which was good to see. But the track record of the WEF in basically trying to deceive the world into their actual plans, which is control of the people, not the freedom of the people. As much as I hear a good thing here, a good thing there, it's very important to still keep a very jaundiced eye toward the World Economic Forum, because their ultimate aims have not changed. They envision at best, this is the best case scenario, a technocratic society that is benevolent, or at least permissive a little bit toward the plebs that they rule over. But they see a technocratic society run by them, of course, appointed by them, of course, nothing organically coming up out of the people. That's still what their future is. And that is, no matter how you want to spin it, dystopian for anybody who values their individual liberty.
What's interesting, though, is that prosperity and energy use are linked, and there are many other things that affect prosperity, but the use of energy increases with prosperity, and the idea that's a wonderful phrase, though, depower. They're going to depower the world, and it's It's blatantly obvious that what that means for the vast majority of the world is that their standards of living will either slow or decrease. And there's no way around that.
No.
We've talked on previous podcasts about something as simple as air conditioning. Air conditioning is a wonderful thing. It makes everyone very comfortable in the summer, but it also has a huge salutary effect on manufacturing because, simply, you look at factories that are 110 degrees in the summer. You put in air conditioning and it drops down to 80, and your workers are more productive and you make more money and they make more money. That's a simple example. But depowering, there are no good things that can come of restricting energy use by the people.
There was, by the way, a very good story this week that came out of the Trump administration and the EPA chief Lee Zeldin, I guess, that all of these cockamamie appliance rules that were inundated on us by the Biden junta have been totally ditched. You will not have crappy, you will have ovens that work, refrigerators that work, air conditioners that work, and that, all of these ridiculous regulations that they have to, energy efficiency or whatever it is, that's all out the window. Thank God for that. So that there you go.
Yeah, and it seems like such a little thing, but being able to buy a dishwasher that actually washes your dishes, or a washing machine that doesn't take forever to run a cycle because it's being efficient with water. One of the things, certain climates really need to be efficient in their water use. Southern California, for instance, Arizona. If you live in the desert, you should be really careful about how much water you use. I remember one time I drive back and forth. I have family in Pittsburgh, and I drive back and forth quite frequently between the Chicagoland area and Pittsburgh, and I go across the Indiana Tollway, across to northern Indiana. And I remember the first time I had made that drive, I had used the facilities, as one does. And they had those disgusting waterless urinals in the men's room.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, you, Lake Michigan is literally 10 miles from here. There is no reason whatsoever for there to be a water efficiency mandate on the Indiana Tollway or anywhere in the Great Lakes region. There is more water than than humans could ever use. You could set up a nuclear plant, 10 feet by 10, 10 feet apart, all the way up and down around Lake Michigan, and they would need the water for cooling, and you would still not run out of water. It is absurd, and so it is a little thing, but the rise of Trump and the scotching of all of these stupid and useless energy efficiency regulations. If energy efficiency is good, people want to save some money, so maybe they have a choice to buy something more energy efficient. But most people want stuff that works. And when I have to go to the bathroom on my road trip to Pittsburgh, I don't want to have to stand in front of a stinky, dried, waterless urinal that 40 other people have pissed in the last 2 hours. It's disgusting and it's stupid. And those are little things, but it makes life better when those things
Exactly.
go away.
And plus, right now, you and I, Jim, are in the upper Midwest, and it is absolutely, ridiculously frigid cold. And this weather is moving to the Northeast, and there's all reports of power outages and all this stuff. And what we saw happening in Germany, I guess, a few months back, because of their reliance on renewables, quote unquote, they were in the dark and shivering in the cold. And it's so people see that. No wonder there is a rise of populist movements in Europe and elsewhere, and especially here. They've had enough of this nonsense, and thank God for that.
Well, if Biden's ultimate energy plans, or I shouldn't say Biden, it's not his, it's the communist left, in the United States, it's their, and it's the globalists, it's their energy plan to make everybody cold and miserable, that there would be many, many deaths from this cold snap, not just in the upper Midwest, but in Texas and in all over the United States, if not for barely, and it really is barely enough baseload power from coal and nuclear and natural gas to make sure that we don't have, enormous widespread power shortages in which people can't heat their homes.
That's already in Europe. Look at the number of deaths every summer. What is that? 150,000 deaths per summer they attribute to lack of air conditioning.
Yeah,
France,
And now,
Germany.
let's face it, I guess Germany and Poland don't, they don't have any coal. So,
Right.
maybe
Yeah,
that's
right.
the one.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. We always hear about those, the heat wave deaths in France or whatever, in other places. It's like, well, that's easily solvable. Just get air conditioning. I know Europeans, it's very difficult to find any place in Europe if you visit that has air conditioning. Most places don't need it as much as we do in the United States because our climate is different than Europe, certainly different than the UK. But, if people are dying of heat, install air conditioning. It's not that difficult. It's all over the United States. The poorest people in the United States have air conditioning. Our public housing has air conditioning. I mean, it's like these are solvable problems. I mean, I don't want to be ruled by a technocracy, but I do want technology to be used to make people's lives more pleasant and to actually save their lives. And, air conditioning can do that. And, doing nuclear power can do that. More natural gas can do that. Just here in the United States, we are standing below our feet are at least 400 years of oil and natural gas. We could go the amount of time between when Christopher Columbus came to the New World and today, we have that much time. We have that much fossil fuels underneath our feet right now that
And
we know of.
you're not counting coal.
Right, and
And
not even counting
it's
coal.
accessible. The new
Probably.
technology of, fracking, and it's accessible. It's
Right.
there. We can get
Listen,
at it where we finally couldn't get it before.
it's not just the availability of fossil fuels. It's also the ability to burn them efficiently and cleanly. You
Right.
know, in 1880, sure, London was covered in soot and people were dying from pollution. Okay, but in 2026, burning coal is not an issue. It can be
No.
burned effectively, efficiently, and cleanly. We
Yeah.
can burn oil effectively, efficiently, and cleanly, and we can obviously burn natural gas in the same way. So,
Yeah.
and again, we're even ignoring nuclear. So there are four tremendous sources of abundant, clean, and relatively inexpensive energy, and they don't want any of it.
And hydroelectric too, jeez.
Yeah.
My
But
God, all of these
beware.
things are available.
Yeah, but beware those who say all of the above energy solutions, because what that means is putting a thumb on the scale for solar and wind. I think Texas especially, I don't know, understand why, but Texas has embraced wind power more than any other state. I think even in California, or maybe California is one and they're number two. But this is now the second time in, I think, 3 or 4 years where a serious cold snap has dipped into Texas and basically froze all of their wind turbines. And so
Oh,
they keep trying to increase the dependency on wind in Texas. And then when they really need the power, if I don't have electricity, I die, or I freeze to death, or, where it's dangerous to be this cold, that the power isn't there. In a rational, in a society run by, or say sh should say governed by rational human beings, wind and solar would be almost nil on our power grid. Certainly shouldn't be on a power grid. You can use it in a micro scale. Solar on your rooftop, go for it. So destroying thousands of acres of good farmland to put solar powers to add that to the grid, and then a hailstorm comes and destroys it all in about an hour. I mean, that's madness. No rational human being would ever build these things and try to make these things policy. But we are run by ideologues, by leftist climate cultist ideologues. Decreasingly so, I hope. I think if we can get past 4 years of Donald Trump, reversing all of this madness, and God
Well,
help us, and then J.D. Vance locking it in for more than a decade. Maybe if we get it far enough behind us in the rearview mirror, it'll never come back.
but then again, Jim, you always come on our show with these wonderful polls of yours showing the young people embracing socialism. I'm going, and I
Yeah.
want to slit my wrists. And I'm going, holy mother of pearl. My God, I mean, what the hell is going on? And yet you have the wonderful prosperity form. So hopefully, I don't know, when we will. Hopefully Vance gets in, and who knows after that. And then we just got to take control of the educational system, because boy, this the this is the The crazy is that we can no longer have another lunatics running the asylum, which is that's what they're doing,
You know,
as we see.
one of the best things about free markets is how quickly they can change things for the better. Because people, I think that given the opportunity, people will immediately respond to the freedom to do what they wish. And, you know, the free market is an amazing, amazing place. And, you know, you talk about things from as small as, you know, a farmer who's, you know, the regulation on what he can farm and when he can farm it changes for the better, and immediately he starts producing more and making more money. And that is this wonderful free market cycle that is so quick in comparison to this top-down crap that we see so frequently. And I think California is a wonderful example of that. The fires, the Palisade fire, burned thousands of homes, and they're not rebuilding any of them. Because this top-down control has limited the free market. You know, in a rational world or in a rational country, high-quality builders would be moving to Southern California and
Yeah.
competing for
Totally.
the opportunity to rebuild multi-million-dollar homes. But they can't because, you know, Sacramento and the lunatics who have been running California for the last 2 decades. Have decided 3 decades have decided that nope, that's not it. We're not going to do it that way.
Yeah, there shouldn't be tent cities of homeless in Southern California. There should be tent cities of construction workers in Southern California, building
Exactly.
all these
Exactly.
homes. And then they make so much money, they go back home or stay there and build their own wonderful homestead somewhere in Southern
Bingo.
California. Yeah, JJ, you talk about like the education system, and that is a huge problem. I do have some hope that Gen Z seems a little bit more based, as the kid says. They're anti-woke. They see this stuff, and it just doesn't. It's not resonating with them as much as the WEF crowd would like it. But you reminded me of that that old saw that hard times create strong men and strong men create good times. Good times create weak men and weak men create hard times. CBD, when you talk about when prosperity is upon us, things can change very quickly and it seems to accelerate, right? It kind of snowballs into good times. But that also, I think you guys might agree that it also fosters complacency, that people forget what it takes to build a functioning, prosperous society, and they think, well, you get fat, you get wealthy, and then you start indulging in ideas like socialism and the idea that, you know what, even though this wonderful world I inherited was just here, and I don't know how it got here, I don't know how it was created, but I went to Barnard, and so I'm smart. And I think I can actually organize it a little bit better because my personal preferences aren't exactly what I see out in the world. So that's all I can, but so I, but I'm real smart. I can do it. And so you have this cycle and, the optimist in me, and I'm usually not the optimist when you bring me on this program, but the optimist in me, thinks that although we did not have catastrophically hard times, like a legitimate Bolshevik revolution in Russia or, something like that,
Hello,
is the time that,
Minneapolis.
yeah, all right. I know, right. We'll get to that, I guess. But
Exactly.
the times were hard enough, and the struggles have been hard enough for really an entire generation of Americans that they are going to eventually see the light of prosperity and free market capitalism because it's already happening. The economy is growing in this country. I think the last time I looked, it was 5.5% GDP growth year over year. That was not thought possible. Again, it was above all economic expectations. And so when this starts to settle in and people understand that, yeah, it wasn't that long ago that economic times were pretty hard and now they're getting better. Why is that? It's because we did away with, at the ballot box, really crappy commie socialist policies, and we let the free market and we let us, the people, decide how our society should run best. And so that's the optimist to me, that maybe this is a bit of a turning point in our in the way the American public at least looks at politics and economics.
Well, I hope so. I mean, we have our dear friend and who was a guest, and we haven't had him on in a while, Michael Walsh, the historian, and our lurker extraordinaire, Victor Davis Hanson. who are also historians of world history, always harken back to the Roman Empire and other, you know, how great they once were and how quickly they ultimately fell. And America, there is no guarantee that we will last forever, but certainly, you know, we need to, if we can break these cycles of, you know, boom and bust and mad, you know, self-inflicted madness, where we decide that, you know, we want to commit cultural and national suicide. But hopefully you are right, Jim, that we, that prosperity and CBD, that prosperity will bring about a change in attitude, and you know, people will see the light, at least for their own self-interest, because enlightened self-interest on the individual level ultimately leads to everybody seeing that, or many people seeing that, and voting that way and instituting things and raising their children that way. And that's where the change will happen for the better.
I think one of the reasons why the left is frantic to foment violence in Minnesota and probably soon in Los Angeles and New York and other places is that the scale of the fraud that is being exposed in Minnesota is opening people's eyes, and they do not want that to happen. I think that the link between the magnitude of that fraud, and it's going to be multiples of many, many billions of dollars in Minnesota and Illinois and California. It's going to show people that the welfare state does not work as advertised. And I think people will begin to make the connection between the welfare state and their lack of progress, their lack of success. You know, people complain and the Heartland Institute polls showed this very, very well. You know, people, many young people are very, very pessimistic about their future prospects. You know, they won't be able to buy a home, they won't be able to build a family, and so on and so forth. And one of the reasons is that those tens of billions of dollars that they are paying in taxes is going directly into other people's pockets and is not
Yep,
benefiting them.
and hopefully they see that, because as the old Hollywood adage goes, that it's not how you play the game, it's how you place the blame. And so far, everybody wants to blame Donald Trump for their misery, at least the younger generations. But now, hopefully, this will expose that as nonsense. And whether or not they want to give Trump praise or not, at least they will see that this business as usual of graft and fraud is probably where the problem lies, as you say, CBD, and that certainly will engender a sea change. And yes, the Democrats are and leftists are definitely shaking in their boots about that, and that's why a lot of this violence, I think, is going on beyond just the immigration issue itself.
I mean, you guys, we're all old enough to remember the 80s and the debates about, you know, welfare benefits back then, you know, the whole welfare queen kind of thing and all of that. But, you know, and Milton Friedman, a great Nobel winning economist, you know, he would point out that, you know, welfare, okay, maybe we should have some welfare, but the problem with welfare, and especially long-term welfare, is that, you know, you are paying people to be unproductive, that you're taking away all the incentives to be a productive member of society if you continue to increase welfare payments to people, and then you make them unconditional on work. And you know, in the 90s there were some reforms about that, and so you could have that economic debate. And that was at the assumption that the government spending is going to people who really need it. Putting aside corporate welfare and all of that, but like, you know, these sorts of things are going to programs and to people who genuinely need help, and we can debate whether how long that help should go, whether these people actually do need help and all that kind of stuff. What we have seen now, and I think it's going to still take a while for the American people to wake up, we're awake, but how the scale of the absolute graft of just in Minneapolis among one small immigrant community is absolutely mind-blowing, that billions of dollars that are supposed to be helping autistic children, or helping elderly shut-ins get to doctor's appointments, or help working mothers afford daycare so that they can go to work and then come back and pick up their kids. But you know, it's expensive, so they can't afford it, so they need a little help on that. And that so much of that in just one city among one immigrant community, Somalia, is almost entirely graft, just stealing money out of your pocket and my pocket, and for the most part, sending most of it. There's two destinations, well, three: their own pockets, one; two, Democrat politicians and their campaign coffers; and three, back to Somalia. And almost to the entire GDP of Somalia is due to the American taxpayer at this point. And it is the fact that this has been going on for years and years and years. And there were some whistleblowers in Minnesota, but they were moved out of their positions or ignored or fired or suppressed, all sorts of things. Those stories are coming out from those whistleblowers. And that everybody in power in Minnesota had to know this graft was going on, and graft at a monumental scale. Again, politicians go to jail for, taking an envelope with maybe $10,000 in it. You go to jail. We have politicians taking hundreds of millions of dollars and putting them into the political campaigns and putting it in their pockets and
God,
shuffling it off to family
Bob
members.
Menendez and his wife with the two little gold coins. They went to the federal pokey. This is like this is the greatest theft, I think, in American history, if corruption, if not, I don't know if world history, but certain American history for sure. This is like, I mean, Teapot Dome look like stealing a piece of bubble gum from a candy store.
And I think that's what's, it's go big or go home, right? If you're going to commit fraud, do it in the billions. Or
Holy God Almighty.
and part of that is because the scale of it is just, it's literally almost unbelievable. It's when you hear about this stuff, it's like they could not have taken $9 billion of complete graft. It's not possible, is it? It is. And so
With
we
no audit,
now.
with no, right, no audits, no checks, no nothing, no, I mean, just it's just the money is gone. $9 billion gone.
Gone, at
And
least.
at
And
least,
if
and
it's
that's the minimum. That's at the bare minimum. And just in Minneapolis, now go to every other immigrant community from wherever, Southern California to to Brooklyn, New York, to wherever, and and considering, forget about the whatever the money going home to whoever your relatives in Minneapolis, Somalia. It's not necessarily going to relatives. Some of the relatives it's going to is Al-Shabaab, the terrorist organization. You better believe. I mean, it's not just money being spent on luxury cars and furs and jewelry. It's and luxury vacations. It's going to fund terrorism, global terrorism.
Right.
I would like to see
And
Donald Trump make this point aggressively and over and over and over again, that the scale of fraud is based primarily on three things, and that is the Democrat Party, frankly, stealing our futures. The much of the illegal community, the illegal alien community in the United States is stealing our futures. And now that's about it. I'll stick with those two. I think he There you
needs to
go.
beat it to death. He needs to make the case before the American people that that is why ICE is being aggressive all across the country. And that is why he's sending the Department of Justice into Minneapolis to find out what the hell is going on. And then warn the rest of the country. They're going to LA, they're going to New York, they're going to go to Illinois, they're going to go to all of the states that have large illegal immigrant populations and find out where that money is going. And so I talk to my wife about this a lot, and she's as cynical as I am on this sort of thing. But none of this, people got to go to jail, man. People got to go to jail like
Lot
now.
of people have to go to jail. You're
A lot of
absolutely right.
people. And if we need to build more jails, that's more construction jobs. That's fine.
There you
Let's
go,
do it.
baby.
And
Let's
every
send them to
single
El
person.
Salvador.
Right. Well, I mean, look, I mean,
Send them to Greenland. There
Yeah, we got to dig up some rare earth material.
you go.
A penal colony. Hey, I'm starting to warm to that idea.
The White Sea Canal project by the Orange Man Bad. There you have it.
And so, since Trump's crackdown on illegal immigrants I don't know, what is it? The number, a couple million have now self-deported. They've
Yes.
left because they don't want to get they don't that it's that's a lot easier. Leave on your own terms, as it were, is better than being caught up in a net. And so what needs to happen here in just Minnesota, you can make a great example of this. Every single person involved in these fake daycare centers and fake transportation companies, and every single person who is a co-conspirator needs to be charged and booked and put in jail, no bail. You stay in there because the scale of this graft is so large. And if you are one of the problems here, guys, is that a lot of the criminals involved in this billion-dollar scheme stealing our money that was that we gave to take care of actually needy people. So it's even a special kind of evil thievery. Every one of these people, a lot of them, I'm sorry, I should say, a lot of these Somali immigrants are naturalized citizens, or they are the sons or daughters of people who came to this country and they are American citizens. Every one of these people, after they are convicted, if they are convicted, need to be thrown in jail. And as soon as their sentence is over, they are denaturalized and sent away and out of this country. You need to make a severe example of this very blatant graft and thievery. Really, the crime of the century, to be honest, when it comes financially. And if then people will start to self-deport, they'll realize, all right, I have $3 million in my pocket. I'm getting the F out of here. I'm going to Ukraine or wherever you came from. I'm getting
Sure,
out
back to
and
Somalia.
back to Somalia, wherever you came from. And so I think if they make a good enough example and people actually go to jail, politicians too, especially, that a good number of the other grift that's going on will end because they realize the punishment is real and it's coming and they want to get out ahead of the posse. Unless that happens, unless people go to jail, and the judicial system in Minnesota, I don't have a lot of faith in it, but we got to
Nope.
try and it has to go now. I should say Kash Patel should look at the way Merrick Garland handled the J6 cases and make that the new standard for how you handle these grift cases in Minnesota.
Oh, that's a
Agreed.
very interesting idea. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
It
Complete
is, yep. Yeah.
antithetical to everything I believe, but I love that idea.
Well, gentlemen, unfortunately, I'm going to have to kind of boogie in a little bit. So, it's just what's going on. We were talking, speaking of Minneapolis, it's, the violence is just, we had an ICE agent had his finger bitten off. We had, and everyone is all moaning and groaning about these poor, innocent little lambs who tried to interfere and tried to literally assault ICE officers and got unfortunately for them they got killed for their troubles and their cannon fodder for the left to preserve, protect, and defend the grift, the graft, the corruption, and this madness. And this has to be, that is just the most infuriating thing,
Yeah, it.
how they're
I mean, we
being
can beat this one to
mirrored.
death, but I actually want to make a point about what's going on in Minnesota and the shooting death of Alex Preti, I think is the way it's pronounced. People are making a big deal out of the fact that he was carrying a concealed weapon legally. Well, not legally because the law in Minnesota states that you have to have your permit and ID with you at all times, and he did not. So he was breaking the law. But I am a firm believer in the Second Amendment. I am also a firm believer in the responsibility that comes with carrying weapons. And what he did was he carried a concealed weapon into a volatile situation and did not inform law enforcement that he was carrying. I have been taught by pretty much everybody I've ever spoken with about carrying concealed weapons that, number one, avoid problems whenever necessary. When I carry, my head's on a swivel and I go in the other direction if I see anything that is even remotely problematic. And Alex Preti went right into the fray.
He was
And
looking for trouble, and
he
beforehand
was.
there were reports that he was injured in some other altercation with police
This is true a
weeks
week
before
before.
or something. So he was looking for trouble. He definitely was looking for it.
I know this is a small point, but it's a very, very frustrating point for me. If you carry, and it is your right, and I suggest that everybody in America carry, but you also have a responsibility to do it rationally. And Jumping into the fray with a bunch of ICE agent or ICE officers is a dumb thing to do. Did he get what was coming to him? I have zero sympathy for this man.
Nope.
Anyway, I know it's a small point, but I just had to get it out. No,
Very good.
yeah, I mean, it's a tra I mean, we don't want to see anybody get shot, but let's understand something here. He was not protesting. He was interfering with legitimate police enforcement activity. You should go on X and look up James O'Keefe. He's done some very he's among many citizen journalists who've done some dangerous and important reporting from the ground in the cold up there in Minnesota. I saw a X thread from a Twitter thread from a former Special Forces guy, and he says what I'm seeing on the ground in Minnesota is very similar, if not identical, to the tactical to the tactics of organized insurgencies in Iraq
Yes.
and
Yep. Yes, I saw
Afghanistan.
it. I saw that post. That was pretty
Yeah, it's
amazing.
fascinating.
That's fascinating. And so, you know, what's going on there is, frankly, a real insurgency, a real insurrection against the legitimate government of the United States. I mean, this goes back to, you know, the left and the Democratic Party, not just the left, but the Democratic Party itself has not considered Donald Trump a legitimate president of the United States who has the right to enforce federal law as written and carry out his policies. And they have said this, it's been annoying, it's been, you know, roll your eyes, but this is the ultimate result of that. When you have convinced the base of your party and then the brown shirts that are organized and paid and trained to go out and disrupt like this, when you have convinced them that we are not living under a legitimate president, we are living under a regime of Nazis and fascists, this is the ultimate, this is where they wanted it to lead. And so, you know, Alex Preti was not a protester. He was an insurgent, and he was putting himself in between our legitimate government and it's like the execution of its laws. It is no different than if, say, your local police, like the police of Los Angeles Police Department, was conducting a raid on a gang hideout, and you know the relatives of the gang members or neighbors decided to interfere with the police to stop the arrests so that the gang members could get away. That's what's happening here. This is not a protest. This is an insurgency. This is insurrection. And nobody should be shot, but if you put yourself in such dangerous situations, this could happen. And
Yes.
so this is organized, and we need to keep an eye on it. And you know, it's a delicate situation, and the way Trump has to handle it is with some, frankly, with some nuance. I know people's like, we're like after 2 days, all right, Insurrection Act, let's go. He hasn't done that, and he hasn't done that for a reason. And now we see that Governor Walz at least has partially capitulated. We have Minnesota State Police out there arresting these insurgents that are getting in the way of legitimate enforcement of federal law. It's a baby step, but it's a step in the right direction. And
Well,
of course, you.
they'll be arrested and they'll be out on the street quicker than you can say, Kamala Harris, legal fund or whatever.
You know,
I
that,
mean,
Stefan, I agree with you, but I think Jim's making a very good point. At least
no, it is
it's
a
a
good point.
small
I
step.
absolutely agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so you know, as you guys know, well, we can maybe wrap it here because I know we got to go. But
Right.
you know, this is only happening first in Minnesota, really. And why? And what also happened in Minnesota in the last 3 months? The exposure of a very, very deep conspiracy among the Democratic Party and immigrant communities to steal literally billions of dollars from the American taxpayer that's supposed to go to help vulnerable people. That is a big deal. People should and hopefully will go to jail for that. And that's the only place this is happening. It's not happening in other jurisdictions. So that's I think telling. And as long as, you know, the whole idea of sanctuary cities needs to go.
Absolutely.
It's no different than saying like the Civil Rights Act was passed and you know, Mobile, Alabama is going to be a sanctuary city to the you know, to a couple of amendments to the Constitution and the Civil Rights Act. It's absolutely no different than that.
I tried it in Arkansas in
Yep.
1954, and it didn't work very well, did it?
It did not. Eisenhower nationalized the Arkansas National Guard and put an end to Orville Farvis's blocking of the school door. Can you imagine if Donald Trump announced the nationalization of the Minnesota National Guard, that the National Guard that Tim Walz basically announced he was going to treat as his own personal militia? Unbelievable what's going on.
Carry him out on a chair, an electric chair, but that's another story.
Oh.
Anyway, guys,
All right,
I
we're going to wrap this up, folks. Thank you very much for listening. I am actually rather pleased that I didn't have to, put myself on suicide watch with Jim and his usual pessimistic self. But it's been quite an optimistic hour. And thank you very much for listening, Jim Lakely of the Heartland Institute. Thank you very much for joining us. You are, as usual, a wonderful, wonderful guest. And we're going to hold you to your standing offer to come back as often as possible. Sefton, take it away.
Yes, friends, God bless you all for your continued love and support in the tip jar and the comments and just being there for us. And yes, Jim Lakely, you are the man. And we salute you and the Heartland Institute for doing fantastic work. And congratulations on your world, your Freedom Forum in response to the usual idiots from the World Economic Forum. And hopefully this will be, this will include for go for many, many years in the future, and we see the extinction of the World Economic Forum and more people seeing things our way, going for freedom and free markets and sanity. And we look forward to having you on again. And there you have it, friends. We'll see you on the next one.
Thank you very much, and thanks for listening, folks.